Hello, everyone, and welcome to One Control Warp Podcast, episode 345. I'm Benjamin Yoder, here today with a all-over-the-place episode. We're going to have a Final Fantasy XI update. Did you know? I'm still playing Final Fantasy XI. The content of playing Final Fantasy XI has been a problem, so I want to talk about that. But going to talk a little bit about Final Fantasy XI. I've been doing Wii U and 3DS modding because the servers are shutting down. I want to talk about that. And then also how hacking, I think, systems has changed a lot of my view on games over time, I think. I think there's a lot of things that I, over the last decade or so, have really shifted my view of how to handle games and things like that. So we're going to be talking about that. Hey, Love and Berry, it's back. Technically, don't get excited. Technically, a new Love and Berry game. It's not really. Don't worry about it. It is, you could play Love and Berry this way, but it's very limited fashion. Capcom is whisking away their handsome men. And also, we got a Zensys review, De-Stress with Zensys. We're going to talk about Zensys, a Nintendo DS game from 2008. It's supposed to de-stress women. But anyways, we're gonna talk about Zensys and my inability to de-stress with Zensys. So yeah, that is our episode this week. Anyways, and a bunch of little things, little news stories here and there as well. That's just the high point. So Final Fantasy XI, though, let's get into it. So if you don't remember, I haven't been listening to the show. I started playing the Final Fantasy XI fan servers back in, I think, September last year. And I went on this whole journey with it. And I learned a lot through playing Final Fantasy XI. But over the end of last year, I had some personal stuff come up that made Final Fantasy XI not a great thing to be living alongside me. So I had to do a lot of like re-evaluating what I was doing with Final Fantasy XI at that time. And then I was kind of spending time playing it over the holidays, and I was like, okay, once the holidays are over, I don't really know what I want out of Final Fantasy XI, so I'm going to stop for now. But in that moment, while that was happening, I started crafting in Final Fantasy XI, which is where you, like, make items and things like that. And I was like, oh, I can just, like, craft for, like, 15, 20 minutes a day, and it's not a big deal, and I'll just craft something, and, you know, we'll do that, and then, you know, every other weekend, maybe I'll actually play the game. And I have played occasionally, but mostly I've just been logging in every day to craft stuff and play the market, because basically I log in, buy materials off the auction house if I can find it cheap enough, make it into real things or like items people can use, and then sell it, right? And it's made me a lot of in-game money, right? And it's been interesting. There's a process that I learned in that, right? Through leveling my crafting systems, also, you know, trying to play the market and what kind of impact you as an individual can have on that market, depending on what type of tactics you take in terms of how much you're selling and what price you're selling it for. How can you modify the amount in the auction to kind of like drive people to buy yours first versus others? Things like, there's a lot of really interesting stuff there. And there's also this whole idea that originally all these auction houses in the world of Bonadil, Final Fantasy XI's, you know, world, were all separated. So you had different auction houses with different economies. And that's not true on this fan server, but it made me think a lot about that. And I'd say probably around like early mid-February, I probably got what I needed out of that. And since then, it's been a very, I don't want to say like unhealthy relationship, but I'd say it started becoming more of a like mobile game kind of situation, where I feel like when I see people play mobile games a lot, you know, you'll ask them like, are you having fun with this, right? And I don't necessarily think you have to be having fun every moment you're playing a video game, right? There's games like Last of Us and stuff like that, right? And they make you feel and resonate with different things, right? But I wasn't feeling like I was getting much of value logging into Final Fantasy XI every day, but it was taking like 15 to 20 minutes to do all this. So I just do it in the morning, you know, wake my brain up in that time frame. But I think in the last, like, over the course of March and doing this, you know, I've been trying to play games in smaller chunks in general. And Final Fantasy XI helped me kind of figure out how to do that a little bit. And I've been playing fighting games and stuff as well in smaller chunks and all that stuff. But then I realized that, like, Final Fantasy XI absorbs, you know, multiple hours of my week because of this still. And I'm not really getting anything out of it. And I'm really, all I'm doing is watching my money in the game go up, which again is helpful as I play through that game, but I'm not playing the game regularly enough for it to really matter. And it was almost like logging in, where there's like this fear of missing out, right? So like, I think when I sell stuff on the auction house, there's only so many slots I can fill on the auction house. So if something sold, like I would feel like an immediate need to like go back in and sell stuff again. So like if I had items in my inventory, I'm like, oh, I can go list something and there's a potential somebody can buy it, right? And then there's also like checking in on different types of material every day, different times of the day, and being like, hey, is this material cheaper right now? Can I go to the guild, which guilds have limited inventory and things like that. So, and the price of the guild's inventory changes depending on the type of material and how much is in there. And so I was going through all that process, but it became less about enjoying that part of the game, I think, and more about making sure I was maximizing income. And I just kind of was like, this isn't that interesting anymore. It's not that fun, but it was like this weird thing that my brain just kind of held on to. And finally, this last weekend, I basically said, I will log in if I'm going to play Final Fantasy XI, and I'm perfectly okay crafting and making money if I'm on Final Fantasy XI to do something, like, you know, look for a party or something like that, and something I could do in my downtime. But I can no longer log back in to just do this. And yeah, it is just one of those things that, like, I think Final Fantasy XI in a lot of ways has retaught me about the ways I have addictive qualities with games. Because Final Fantasy XI, I think, as a video game, in some ways pulls out the most extreme versions of those, right? And what I mean by that is, like, you know, there's a period in October last year where I basically sat down and I kind of intentionally let myself do this because I was curious how far I would let it go, just to kind of like analyze myself and see what was driving me. But I played Final Fantasy XI for like probably about like 23 hours in a row once. Maybe not that much, maybe closer to like 20 hours. But anyways, it was pretty bad. I was in a bad mental state in general back then, but I just kind of like, let me just watch this play out. It's basically what I did. And I'm not like worried about that anymore. Just, you know, I kind of have put my head back on in a better place more recently. But it is something that it was just like, you know, in the case of Final Fantasy XI, everything's so slow and spaced out, you can do that and not make a lot of progress, right? But if I'm playing like an RPG, I think there are similar tendencies I have, especially as I get towards the end of a game, where I'll want to really focus on finishing a game and I will sacrifice other parts of my life to try to do that. And so what happens is like I get impatient and I just like try to shove myself through the end of a game really fast when I don't really need to do that. There's really no benefit to me doing that. And it just kind of, it's just this weird impulsive thing that I do where it's like I'm just going to spend the next 15 hours of my life doing nothing but playing this RPG because I just want to get it finished and done. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things like when I work on videos and stuff too and things like that. So I think Final Fantasy XI has been a really interesting experience in like recognizing that kind of addiction and things like that, and like what causes problems with me in terms of like when I have things I want to do and then my body in a lot of ways is in a lot just basically telling me to do nothing but try to complete thing. And stuff like that. So it's been a really informative experience in that regard. But more recently, I just feel like the more like just logging in 20, 30 minutes in a day, making sure I'm not missing out on deals and things like that. You know, again, I think it's more extreme version of certain parts of my brain. I don't think that that is something I normally struggle with though, right? I don't play a lot of mobile games. I don't have a lot of fear of missing out in games and things like that. I don't really care about battle passes, limited time events, all that stuff is pretty irrelevant to me for some reason. I don't know why. But when Final Fantasy XI gets integrated into it, it becomes more in that way. And so it's just this kind of a weird thing to just see, like, here are these things that I see people struggle with all the time. And I think in a lot of ways, I felt like, oh, I don't struggle with these things. But when you put Final Fantasy XI in front of me, I do struggle with those things. So it's interesting. That's not to say that I'm in like an unhealthy spot with Final Fantasy XI. I think the fact that I did recognize it and then basically told myself, you know, set some rules and boundaries ultimately helped that right now in the short term, it seems like. But it's been interesting. Like, it's a weird thing because it's a topic about me so much more so than it is Final Fantasy XI. But what Final Fantasy XI brings out of me, right, in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think in a lot of ways you could probably look at MMOs and things like that being an early, like, you know, version of what eventually would become all these live service games, trying to keep your attention, keep you logged in, keep you checking the game, keep you thinking about the game all the time, keep you invested in people playing the game, so you're all invested in this game together, and you're only all have your subscription fees, or in the case of more modern games, you know, you're all spending money on the same games and all that stuff. It definitely feels like it is a weird analysis of that whole thing for me, like kind of experimenting with myself and my own mind. But it does kind of feel weird that I have to go back to this old game in order to do it, in a way that just feels like a genuine, like my brain craving to do thing kind of thing, right? Hopefully that made sense. I don't know. But yeah, my Final Fantasy XI situation is I do still want to play Final Fantasy XI, but if I'm going to log in, I want to be playing Final Fantasy XI, not just making money in Final Fantasy XI, not just playing the auction house. So that is an update on Final Fantasy XI. Still engaging with it. I don't really know, again, what the long-term situation is. I still have ideas for the video for that thing, but I haven't really... I thought a lot about it at the end of last year and just haven't really made any progress on actually reworking it, things like that. I've been kind of, with the featured video stuff, because I've been doing a lot of, like, kind of life rebalancing, my progress on that has been particularly slow, which is about right. Those featured videos just take a lot of work, so I'm working on a shorter one right now. I haven't worked on it in, like, another week or two, so I need to really sit down and spend a little bit more time on it, but it's a shorter video, and there's still some gameplay and stuff I'm recording for it, so I'm not quite ready to even really finalize it, even if I do get there. So yeah. Anyways, speaking of fear of missing out, Wii U and Nintendo 3DS. Are you listening to this on Monday? You messed up. The Wii U and 3DS servers, by the time you're hearing my voice on a Monday, have shut down. This is like for real. So if you don't know, if you're like, oh, I thought this already happened in the past, the eShop shut down. Not even the eShop shut down. You can still log into the eShop, but you could not, the payment processing shut down. And then previously for Wii U and 3DS, the Miiverses shut down and stuff like that as well. So there's a lot of things that eventually have been coming down with the Wii U and 3DS. What's really, really interesting about this is that this is, you know, the time when the servers are just going away. They're just gonna be gone. And we've had some experience with this kind of thing in the past in terms of, like, you know, the industry as a whole with the Wii stuff shutting down, right? But even the Wii was not a very heavily online integrated system, right? It had online, but it was very largely focused on offline. You know, digital purchases of retail games weren't really a thing. You know, WiiWare and things like that. Very small scale storefronts in the context of today. Not a lot of titles. But this is one of those situations that is a situation where these systems are heavily integrated with online elements, right? And, you know, full retail games are being, you know, distributed. Patches for games are being distributed. You know, all these online functionalities that even if you don't play games online, impact your experience, right? And this is really, like, I feel like the first time we're having a major platform just kind of fall off or have fallen off now, where this stuff is just not going to be available in an official sense. It's kind of crazy. I think I talked about this before. 360 and PS3 are still around. But I mean, this is coming for 360 and PS3, right? I don't think those systems are going to last much longer. The Wii U came out, like, you know, 7-8 years afterwards. You know, Nintendo's been very aggressive about shutting their online servers off generally as a whole. So, you know, I think they just realize that long term, they don't really need this. And I don't think most people care about digital libraries, especially through their experience. I don't think they've seen that care, right? They will resell you those games, right? That's their preferred situation. They don't want you to download those old games, right? I think it depends on who you're talking to, right? Like, I think if we're talking about people like me and probably anyone listening to this podcast, absolutely you care about your digital library, right? But if you are like my dad, the dude who buys Assassin's Creed every year, you know, even people who, you know, maybe pick up a Switch and just buy the big first party Nintendo stuff, right? Like, I don't think they have a strong desire to go back to those old versions of those games. That doesn't mean they don't want to play the game. It just means they don't want to play it on a Wii U, right? So we're going to, I'll buy it and play it if it's on the Switch, right? But if it's not on the Switch, then I don't want to deal with it, right? Even if I bought it on a Wii U, I don't want to deal with it. I really think that probably the majority of the audience probably is more in that camp of just like, they would, if you ask them yes or no, they probably would say, yeah, I'd be good to keep it, but they probably wouldn't care enough kind of thing. So anyways, and so this service is going down, and I'll be honest with you, I don't have a ton of like digital purchases on Wii U. 3DS, I have a little bit more there. But you know, these are not platforms that I've been physical focused, right? And these are not platforms that I heavily invested in, despite enjoying both of them. 3DS, I do have a lot more games, and I didn't go and like patch a bunch of games. I probably should have, but you know, I'll get into it later. But anyway, so it's a pretty big deal. And, you know, one thing I did with my Wii U was I went ahead and patched all my games. I only had like 5 or 6 games that were, I haven't played yet. And then I had like 10 or 15 other games that I just went ahead and made sure they were patched up and stuff like that too. And then I just went and made sure all my games were downloaded, because I have a hard drive that I bought for Xenoblade Chronicles X specifically for loading times and things like that. So anyways, I'm getting too much in the weeds here, but yeah, I just think it's a really big deal, overall. And, the big reason I really kind of maybe, if this just happened and I didn't engage with it, there's a good chance I just wasn't even thinking about a lot of this stuff. But one of the reasons why I ended up engaging with this was there's the Spot Pass preservation or Spot Pass preservation project. If you don't know about this, it was basically a run to try to preserve Spot Pass data, which is basically like, it's kind of like Street Pass. Most people seem to know Street Pass over Spot Pass, but like Street Pass, where you walk by other systems and you download data from other systems, Spot Pass is basically, you know, downloading data from the internet. I believe there's also cases where there's like, hey, if you go to like a Best Buy and they have like this device there that will distribute Spot Pass data, it would also download it there. I could be wrong about that, but I believe that was also maybe a context for this as well. So, but yeah, like your system would cache that data, it seems like. And so basically if you didn't even have to modify your system, but I just was like, I'll just go ahead and mod my systems because the servers are shutting down anyways. I'll mod it and then just upload that data, you know, and send it to the archive project. It's just a good excuse for me to be aware of like, what systems do I have? What states are they in? And then I had bought in a lot of 3DSs and then also 2 Wii Us with basically this intention of separating them out, because I was too scared about associating my Nintendo Network account with the hacked system, because the Nintendo Network account is something that still is utilized today, right, on the Nintendo Switch and stuff. So I didn't want to lose access to all my Switch downloads and things like that as well. So I had these separate systems, one with custom firmware and one's normal. And then basically sitting there and, you know, being like, well, I guess the Nintendo account on here is useless now. So I guess it's time to hack the system. And just so I had like 4 3DSs that I hacked and 2 Wii Us. So it was a week long project. I mean, custom firmware hacking is actually not that bad. You can definitely mess it up. The worst I've had is the Vita, where I ended up in like this weird state where like I couldn't launch the Vita, but eventually I was able to fix it. But yeah, I went through all that process, and it's really interesting to see that like the 3DS, every 3DS has like a different hacking process and depends on the version as well. So it's this really diverse process you go through depending on your system that you have. And you can still hack your systems today. You don't need to worry about not that you missed the boat on that. You just can't upload, you know, the Spot Pass archive data stuff. Or at least not that I'm aware of. So anyways, so it was really interesting. So, you know, naturally, after going through and modifying all these things and things like that, I played around with the custom firmware on there a little bit. The Wii U is a kind of, I would say, closer to what I remember the Wii being kind of, where it's like there's a lot of apps and tools you can use, but it doesn't really feel like a ecosystem, at least like when you first install it and like things like that. Like there's a homebrew store you can go to, but unless you really know what you're looking for and why, you know, it's not something you really browse and just download kind of thing. So it's so like a lot of custom firmware, for me at least, it is very much about pursuing some particular interest that you have. 3DS is a little different. If you're not aware, there's this thing called HShop on Nintendo 3DS, which is basically just the eShop kind of. It doesn't look nearly as nice. But it is a shop where you can go, and it's not a shop. You just download games, right? Which a lot of systems have this, but in the case of at least the HShop, seems like this is going to a different server than Nintendo server. So you just go and you're like, I want to download Triforce Heroes. And, you know, it shows you Triforce Heroes. It says, okay, here's all the versions of Triforce Heroes. Here's all the regions of Triforce Heroes. pick the one you want. Also, we will distribute you the patch files through this thing as well. Now, I believe H-Shop does not have everything. Nintendoji, for example, is not on H-Shop for DSiWare, but it has a lot. You know, chances are most people are going to find what they need on the H-Shop. But it is this weird feeling of just like, oh, now that I've installed this thing, like, every major 3DS game and even, you know, most of the nicher ones, right? It's just available in like two clicks. And, you know, I think I'm a big believer in like buying and supporting developers and things like that, right? I don't really hack my modern systems for any kind of piracy. You know, I think there is probably situations that there's like weird wiggle room with me where it's like, oh, like, can I play Castlevania on a subscription service? And I'm like, I don't really want to do that. So I'll just, you know, go about whatever way. I'll figure that out if I want to play Castlevania and don't have a copy of it around me for some reason. I think I have it on Wii U, actually. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that. And I'm not opposed to using ISOs and ROMs, you know, in different situations, depending on what I need and why. I'm doing some testing between different versions of certain games right now. And rather than having to go buy every version of that game, it's just nice to be able to, you know, go and burn one of the other versions and just do the testing I want to do between those versions and just confirm stuff. And also just kind of see how those changes affect the game and stuff like that, right? So there's a lot of good reasons why I would like to do that without having to invest, you know, $30-$40 into like four or five different versions of a game that are no longer in print, right? They're not being sold, kind of thing. And so on 3DS, you know, now the 3 eShop's shutting down, you know, there is no way to purchase those games, you know, in a way that supports the developers. The physical copies, you know, only support, you know, the people who are reselling them, which I don't really have a big, I've never been the kind of guy that's like, oh, we got to protect the reseller market. I'm just like, eh. You know, I think it's perfectly fine to, you know, ignore those people overall and not worry about their financial investments. You know, that's the decisions they made when they purchased those games, if they're trying to consider the value of it, right? But yeah, it's just this weird feeling of just like, oh, now I can just like press a button and two clicks have this thing here and play it, right? And, especially I felt this way after like WiiWare shutting down and stuff like that. The games I bought on WiiWare on the Wii, I bought, like, the way I view it is like when you buy a bunch of games, especially like Rise of Store shutting down, to basically download them, what you're really doing is planting a flag, I feel like, right? You're planting a flag saying, I supported this, I purchased this legitimately, here it is. Then my Wii died and all those flags I had planted were gone, right? And then Nintendo not going to help me, right? They're like, whatever. And it's just like, okay, well, I supported these games, you know, at the time. So I guess I'll just go download them again, because otherwise what else am I going to do? Right. What am I going to worry about? And stuff like that. And then I just kind of realized in that moment, just like I bought those games to plant a flag, and many of those games to this day, I have not played. Right. And it's like, I'm not saying you can't cultivate a library. I do it all the time, right? I like doing it a lot of times. But when it comes to digital stuff, especially where you can't really like maintain that thing that you have purchased, it is basically just this thing that you kind of put down your money for in the moments when it's being taken away from you in a lot of ways. So it's this kind of weird feeling. And now it's just to the point where like, I feel like, sorry, this is kind of rambly, but I feel like I don't buy nearly as many modern games, not because I'm like, oh, I'll just get it for free, but because I don't want to plant flags for no reason. Like, I don't want to put money down for something that I will potentially never play, and then potentially lose it, and then potentially have to go figure out how to get it again, right? It just feels like this process that doesn't really make sense to me. Again, if you want to support a developer, I'm not telling you not to, right? But, like, you know, going out of my way to really try to buy games that often were, like, things that I was, like, not that interested in, but it's like, oh, maybe I'll play this someday. I think it just didn't really make a lot of sense. And so it just makes me feel like when I look at the Switch and stuff like that these days and like, the eShop there, and, like, I kind of just don't look at it, and I'm kind of okay just letting that stuff just disappear into the ether for me. And if someday I need it, I'll go look for it. But today I don't need to worry about it. Don't need to keep up with it and stuff. Now that doesn't mean it'll always be there, right? I think the Hunex PSP gravure, is that what it's called? Bikini Lady calendars are maybe gone forever, right? We lost history that day. But you know, I feel like it is just one of those things where, like, the time as time goes on, the less and less I feel like I care about, you know, trying to plant these flags and stuff, and even buying physical for older games and stuff too. I just feel like it's not that important to me anymore. Now I think it's very important to know that, like, physical games to me as a whole, I think, are still important. I was just actually dealing with this where I was going and downloading all my games, and I downloaded Pikmin 3 on my Wii U. I'm like, I own Pikmin 3 on Wii U. And remember, it's like, oh, I do, because Mario Kart 8 came with, like, a free download for some reason, basically just to, like, anything to get people to buy a Wii U. And so, like, if you bought it within a particular time frame, you would get a free download. I got Pikmin 3, and God, I could not tell you that I owned Pikmin 3, right? If it was on my shelf, I would have told you. But otherwise, you know, unless I went and did this specifically, or I went and downloaded it from the Nintendo shop from my download section, I wouldn't be able to tell you. And a lot of times, physical games are just literally a physical reminder to me that, like, hey, Gormini on the Nintendo Wii, check it out someday. So yeah. I also have some thoughts on, like, so I have negative feelings as well about, like, just being able to download everything from H-Shop. That kind of fits into, like, the whole emulation thing a long time ago as well. So it's like, if you just jump between free games all the time and never commit to something, you'll never really appreciate a game. Or maybe I shouldn't say you never really, but it makes it harder to appreciate a game, or really stick with a game and stuff like that. You're much quicker to bounce if you don't have to invest in a particular game, kind of thing. And I have a lot of thoughts and feelings about, I think, what... I don't know how... I've been spoiled over my life by physical stores, maybe. I don't know. This is a conversation I want to get in today. If I remember in the future, I'll talk about it. But I think basically the summary of it is that I don't really know how to do discovery on digital storefronts. I don't know how to go find the games I want. And then also, when I do find games that I'm interested in looking at, I think there's too much information on those pages for me. And I think it makes it very easy for me to say no to a game. Where I feel like when I buy a game in a store, looking at, like, the three postage notes or postage stamp size screenshots and reading the description, it's much easier for me to say yes. And from a money spending perspective, I think, you know, that's potentially problematic. But from a discovery perspective of finding games, I think that is actually a negative, where if I can understand a game more upfront, the less likely I am to be willing to look at it. Like, if Battle Rage on the Wii, the mech combat game, if I saw that on a Steam page, I would not have bought Battle Rage. But on the Wii, with tiny screenshots, and I was, like, imagining the idea of, like, mechs fighting each other on the Wii, sure, I'll check it out for $5. But on Steam, I can see what it looks like, and I go, So... That's kind of the whole argument there. So I was like, I'm going to leave this behind. But then I realized, like, I don't know if I'll talk about it next week. So let me just kind of give a high level explanation of that. So anyways, that's what's been up with me. Sorry, I kind of rambled on for a long time. This is probably going to be a long show, just as a heads up. So we're going to keep going through. Let's get into some news stories here. DL Site. If you don't know, DL Site is a doujin website. They sell doujin games, doujin books and stuff like that, collections of art from different artists, things like that. And if you want to get Comiket stuff but can't go to Comiket, you can often find various books and things like that from different Comiket shows there and things like that. I think it's really important to note that, like, doujin content in general is not inherently sexual. Doujin content is just kind of like fan-made goods and things like that. But there is a willingness to explore that space. And if you go to Comiket and stuff like that, it's definitely something to be aware of. And then going to DL Site, something to be aware of as well. So apparently DL Site's in some kind of hot water, though, because they have that erotic content. A lot of that erotic content is not necessarily what especially Western companies want to be associated with, if possible. And so one of those types of companies are payment processors. So Visa, MasterCard, I think American, whatever it's called, American something, all of those companies have disabled the ability to process transactions on DL site, which I forget where I saw. I think I have like an Automaton Media report. I forget if this is in there or not, but I believe they said that like 50% of DL site's transactions happen over these credit card companies from the West kind of thing. I don't know if it's specifically Western. I don't know if those companies have a presence in Japan. But basically, they were asked to get rid of some stuff, and they kind of danced around a little bit and then just got basically disabled from selling. There's not a lot to say right now other than it's just hard to buy stuff on DL site. I don't really know the financial situation of DL site as a whole. I'm hoping generally that they pull through, and it sounds like websites like Skeb, which is basically like an art website, art commissioning website, previously was hit by similar things. I don't know how they got around it. But you know, it sounds like these other Japanese websites that deal with adult content have been hit by this before. So it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go out of business, something like that. But, DL site is full of incredibly old and interesting doujin content. And it would be a huge shame if for some reason it ever went away. But that's really all I had to say about that. There's not much to say. Hopefully they work it out and figure out what they got to do to get that worked out. But there's a ton of old doujin games on DL site that barely anybody's bought or played. So, Love and Berry, it's back. It's ready. So for Love and Berry anniversary year this year, they are introducing a Love and Berry button. I've actually seen this before where I think Eureka Battle had a thing where they also just distributed an arcade button that you could just like press for some reason. So it's a little circle disc and you press the button, and Love and Berry is doing the same thing. However, where Eureka Battle is like an RPG game, so I don't think you can do much with that button. Love and Berry is a rhythm game. So you know what rhythm's associated with? Music. And from what I can tell from this Forgamer article using machine translation, it does play, I think, like 5 or 6 Love and Berry songs. And you can play to the beat of the song. I don't know if it tracks it or anything like that, but you can play, you know, where the tambourine would normally go, your ding, 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 throughout the song, which just makes it kind of like a Love and Berry portable version. But you do not see any dress up. Like, there's no screen on this thing. It's just a button with sounds coming out. So more of a toy than anything, but it is a Love and Berry thing you can interact with and potentially somewhat play. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Obviously, the more preferred method of playing Love and Berry these days, let's say if you're going to go all legit, right, is the DS Love and Berry probably. But if you're going to go not legit, there's emulation things as well. I don't really know the situation with emulation because Love and Berry is, you know, a card game kind of thing, right? So the distribution of cards, the rate at which you get cards is important in terms of like your progression through that game, in my opinion, personally. Obviously, that maybe doesn't matter if they're like a card game selling like booster packs, like say Dragon Quest Crossblades did. But, you know, I think for me, at least, that's kind of part of the progress is slowly getting the printout of cards from the machine kind of thing. But yeah, so I don't really know how in an emulated environment that's handled, and if you just get access to everything or you kind of turn stuff on and off as you want, that kind of stuff. I think if I ever were to play Love and Berry in an emulation environment or a DS environment, I would basically kind of withhold cards for myself, and then at the end of each play session, add a new card to my deck, which would give me more options and things like that. I think that's what my plan would be. It's the end. The end for Capcom. Not really. It is the end of Capcom's Otome game, Toroware no Palm. This was a old phone game where I believe how it worked was you were a lady in a room, and in your mirror, there was a man who is stuck in a prison cell. This is all very old information coming out of my brain and could be completely warped or wrong. I believe he's in a prison cell, and basically you build a bond with him, and you would like put... I think the reason why palm is in the name is that you'd put your palm against his on the window kind of thing. So he'd kind of touch you through the glass kind of thing in a way. In a prison environment where, like, I think you see it in, like, stuff where, like, somebody puts their hand on the glass kind of thing in an emotional situation. I think it's that kind of thing. But, yeah, their mobile game shutting down this year. Rest in peace. Now, I don't know if this impacts the Switch game, because I actually have the deluxe edition on Switch. That might be offline only, or might have offline support, but I don't think it's been updated in the rate that the mobile game has been updated. I could be wrong about that. But yeah, the mobile version is going to be shut down. I will say, I don't know of any Capcom game with like handsome men at this point, right? You have like Sengoku Basara years ago, but I think Sengoku Basara 3 was the last one, right? Like PS3 and Wii, right? And then you have Toraware no Palm shutting down too. And, you know, I don't think Capcom has been, oh, I guess Ace Attorney kind of has that kind of like more men appeal, women loving men appeal, I guess. I don't know how to put it. But, you know, I think that has something there. When was the last Phoenix Wright game, though? Or last Ace Attorney game? It was a 3DS game, right? That was the last, like, actual one. That was, like, a new one. So it's been a while. They're re-releasing those games for sure. But yeah, I'll be curious if they ever make a new one. Maybe they announced one and I just forgot. I'll be honest with you. I played Ace Attorney 1. Was like, cool, cool, cool. Nice experience. Every time everyone was like, you really got to play more Ace Attorney, I was just like, I kind of don't care. So Ghost Trick, great game. Amazing game. I love Ghost Trick. But another Ace Attorney, I don't know. I don't think I'll ever play one. But anyways, point being, Capcom is abandoning Handsome Men, it looks like. We'll see. Maybe they'll announce a new Handsome Man game soon. But that game had a long run. I think it's been 8-something years at the very least. I could be wrong about that. It's been a long time since that Toraware no Palm's been out. So I think it did its duty, did its business, and can move on into the twilight that is all live service mobile games, where they go to die and nobody can play them again. On this case, at least there's a Switch version. A Switch version that I believe functions. So speaking of Switch mobile games... Not really a Switch mobile game. This is a game specifically made for Switch, I think. I don't know if it's coming to other platforms, but gosh, we were talking about Any Crate's last podcast, I think, because they were talking about the Battle Network game. I was talking about, oh, Any Crate's just like shoving stuff out all the time now. They're making a Gunvolt Suica game, which if you don't know, I think the Suica game is like the watermelon game. Like a bunch of fruit come down and you drop them into each other and they combine two fruits of the same kind. It turns into a larger fruit kind of thing. And eventually they turn into watermelons and that's how you cash out, right? They're doing a Gunvolt version of that. It looks incredibly quick and slapdash put together. I don't know how much it costs. It says it came out on April 5th. So this news story is already old. So I guess you can play it today if you want to. It's on PlayStation 4, PC, Switch. No Xbox. So that's actually interesting because Any Crates has been very good about supporting Xbox, actually. So that's interesting that they have decided not to for this game. I don't know if we talked about it. I can't remember if we did, but like there's been a lot of quotes out there from Phil Spencer more recently about Xbox and stuff. And I don't really know. Do I want to get into that right now? I don't really know. I've already gone on a lot of side tangents, but one of the things that kind of came out around GDC and stuff like that and people talking about the Xbox's place in the industry is that the European sales for Xbox are becoming kind of stagnant. And it looks not great there, which you don't know. Historically, Sony has always performed better in Europe. So it is not too weird that the Xbox is not performing as well there. But it is maybe potentially getting to a point that it is becoming a... we're hitting a point where maybe Xbox is going to shift back into... Well, I mean, they've always been kind of missing out on games, right? That's kind of the other thing. I don't know. It's weird. Like, does Final Fantasy 16 need to come to Xbox? I don't know. Anyways, that's not either here or there right now, what the current state of Xbox is. But, I think I've mentioned before, I just think the console industry is changing and that consoles probably are not going to exist the way they used to. Nintendo maybe being the exception there. I think Sony potentially could kind of maintain what they got going on, but I don't think there's a lot of room or growth that will happen in this space anymore. Could be wrong. One thing that did come up, I forget, where was this that this was mentioned? But I always talk about, like, I don't know people's relationship with, maybe it was on the Jeff Gerstmann show. I don't know people's relationship. I don't know people who are younger, their relationship with PCs, right? Are you just playing everything on mobile? I don't know. Are you just playing everything on Fortnite mobile game time? Although I think Fortnite's not on mobile right now. Like, I don't know. But someone, I think it was Jeff Gerstmann, mentioned the fact that, like, but kids see people stream and kids want to stream. And to do that, you need a PC. I mean, you could stream on console, but to do it the real way, you need it on PC. I thought that was really interesting. I never thought about it that way before. And I do feel like, I don't know for sure. I feel like a lot of the Japanese PC industry has come back with the rise of VTubers as well. And so, like, I wonder if that's related there. I don't know. It was something I heard that I thought was kind of interesting. So we're getting way off track again this week, this podcast. Sorry. One last news story. I'm going to skip another. We have another news story here. I'm going to skip it, though. Natsuman. This is the Boku no Natsuyasumi, My Summer Vacation developer. I think Millennium Kitchen is their name. Natsuman, the Switch game that they're making that is in that series, is been out in Japan for a while now. But it seems like they trademarked a English name for the game, which is just Natsuman 20th Century Summer Vacation. So it seems likely that there's probably going to be a worldwide release. I have a very strange feeling on this because I think after playing Boku no Natsuyasumi 2, which, you know, it was in its own way an interesting experience since I was having to, like, playtest it and stuff like that. So the way I played that game was not necessarily the way I normally would have played it. I feel like my enthusiasm for that series has dipped pretty hard. So Natsuman, I think, was interesting to me when it was announced. I don't know if it's interesting to me anymore. Like, I don't think I'm even going to play the Shin-Chan games anymore either. I think they're look neat, but I guess so. I think the thing I am looking for out of Boku no Natsuyasumi, My Summer Vacation kind of games is almost always the character development stuff, and I like it, but I don't need more of it, right? I kind of got what I needed with Attack of the Friday Monsters and to some extent Boku no Natsuyasumi 2. So the idea of, like, revisiting yet another game with that look and feel, even if it is like an open world game that you can explore, I wonder if that would be enough for me. Like, mechanically, there's different stuff going on there, but the feeling that it's trying to give you, I think, feels the same to me. So I'm on the fence about it. I don't know. We'll see. I've really fallen behind on modern releases, unfortunately. That's part of the thing of me trying to change how I play games and stuff is to be a little bit better about playing games in smaller chunks of time. And hopefully that means I can make more progress on the games I want to make progress on, right? Dragon Quest Treasures is still always on my mind. I got Edo Zombie Uprising on PS5. Still have not played that game. I do want to play Super Mario Wonder at some point. The new Princess Peach game came out. There's a lot of these games that I really would like to sit down and play at some point, but I just haven't had the chance to. They kind of bogged down with a lot of stuff, but this is kind of the reason I want to take Final Fantasy XI's daily login out of my life, because that is like hours a week I could be using playing other games and getting something more out of them. Even I don't stop playing Final Fantasy XI, just not doing it that way. So yeah. And I've been playing a lot of Granblue Fantasy Versus for fighting game stuff, so I've been working on that. So anyways, there's our new segment there. We're going to wrap up with two last segments here. We're going to go into Jillian's Corner here. Again, everybody, thank you so much for supporting me on Ko-fi. We got Megamint as well as Demodori once again supporting me. So thank you both so much. Sorry there hasn't been a video lately. Let me double check. How close are we to that goal? We're 77% of the way. We're almost there. So thank you again. I'm trying to get stuff done. Sorry, working on it. But you know, we'll see where life gets us. But anyway, so again, if you want to ask a question, let me know. I've been doing a lot more question asking on Twitter to just kind of get different people's feelings about things. And I've been wondering if there's a way I can like integrate that into the more podcast environment as well. Once Jillian's questions kind of wrap up here, but I think this is the second to last one, I believe. So we are reaching it. Jillian, you just missed 345, Jillian. I'm sorry. Anyways, you overshot by one. What a shame. Anyways, again, thank you again, Megamint. Thank you again, Demodori. Jillian asked the questions, what game's art style speaks to your heart the most? And oh, this is a hard question. This was ridiculously hard. I don't know if I've had a harder question to answer than this. And I'll be honest with you, I kind of didn't finish answering it because I was going through my whole list of games and so many jumped out at me as like me loving the look of them for different reasons, right? And I eventually just stopped looking because like I have too many already on this list. But I think Atokadol, I think for me is that very, I don't know how to put it. There's some things about Aikatsu and Prepara that are very idol focused. And I'm not a huge fan of the idol aesthetic. And maybe part of that too is this feeling that like idol aesthetics feel more like aimed towards, I don't know, like when you make an idol outfit, right? What is the intention of it in a lot of ways? And I feel like a lot of times it gets kind of into like this kind of sexier space a lot of times, even though games like Aikatsu and stuff like that typically feature younger characters, right? In case of Aikatsu, I could be wrong, but I feel like the outfits feel more like, oh, I would expect on like a stage show kind of thing, which is, you know, accurate for what they're trying to do. And I think I really love that Atokadol is that kind of like goth or that Lolita fashion kind of thing. Very cutesy outfits, very, very, you know, elaborately designed and things like that. And I like that it is just like very set in that way. There's a couple of outfits that are like more kind of idolish, but they seem to be the outliers outside of the other outfits. And so I really love that part of Atokadol as a fashion rhythm game and stuff like that. I'm not saying that like those other games are like weird because like, oh, they're real sexy kind of thing, right? But it is a lot of like, you know, these kind of like crop top kind of things and stuff and all that stuff, right? And so whether you want to consider it sexy or not, a whole other thing, right? But like, anyways, getting away from that. You know, it is a very specific aesthetic that is focused around idol culture, and inevitably the idol culture aspect of that bleeds into that. And I just don't have an affinity for idol culture. I just don't care about idols, right? It's just not something I care about. I care about idol games because they have card games elements usually, but you know, I don't really care about them. So it's hard for me to be super excited about them. But you know, I would like to play an Idol Master someday, but not because it's an idol game, but because it's a raising game, probably more than anything. So that'd be my big reason to play Idol Master. So, I love the look and feel of Buddy Mission Bond. That's the iShield 21 artist. And you know, I don't want to say too much about iShield 21's art. You know, I think it didn't initially grab me as much back then. But seeing it portrayed in the way with Buddy Mission Bond and like all these characters, they're all very handsome and cute and stuff like that, right? I think they're all very appealing design wise in a way that I really enjoy, right? These characters and stuff like that. That being said, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be able to play with different styles, but like, you know, I think Buddy Mission Bond is a very, everyone's very handsome and cute kind of thing usually, with some exceptions like, what's his name? Accord or something like that. I think his name is he's an older fellow in that game. He's a big pudgy guy, kind of thing as well. But, yeah, there's a lot of very, very prettied up character design. And I really like that in Buddy Mission Bond. El Shaddai and Killer 7. I really love the environments in both those games. I love how the environments just kind of blend together. So if you don't know, like in the case of like a Killer 7, you might be running down like a hallway. And, you know, obviously a hallway has like four corners, right? Because it's like the two points where the ceiling meet, the two floors to the points where the floor meet. And those exist in that world, but you don't see them. They just kind of blend in. So when you're running down a hallway, you may not necessarily see most of the hallway, but the game does enough visual information to tell you that it's a hallway. El Shaddai is a very similar feeling, I think, although I think maybe a less so. There's more detail in the environment. Things are a little bit more defined, but it has a very similar feel to that. I like the look of Xenoblade Chronicles 1 a lot. I think Xenoblade Chronicles 1 has a really cool, like, Vagrant Story-esque look to it. I do kind of feel like Xenoblade has adopted a more generic anime aesthetic, but I would really like to see that kind of, like, softer look kind of adapted to it, right? Like, I think one thing I try to talk to people about when I criticize Xenoblade's current visuals is that, like, I think my problem with Xenoblade's current visual is that it feels like it could be a Tales game in a lot of ways. And like a Tales game is kind of like, for me, baseline anime look, right? Anime game look kind of thing. But I like thinking about games like Valkyria Chronicles or Kankole in Arcade, where it has that kind of like brushed, like, you know, lined look kind of thing. And the character designs and how they're modeled and stuff is very much just like standard anime character. but these nice attention to details with filters and things like that really give those games their own looks and stuff like that. And I don't think Xenoblade has something like that. And I would really like to see Xenoblade adopt something like that. And, you know, obviously, because I don't know what that should look like or what it could look like, I think thinking about that kind of more softer look of Xenoblade 1 is something that I'd love to see kind of come back to the series, because I do like that soft look on Xenoblade 1. And part of that, I think, was definitely for Wii console limitations, right? I don't think that's necessarily a mistake, but I think if you look at Xenoblade Chronicles 1 early in development and the detail in those characters, it seemed like a very intentional choice to make these characters, you know, less detailed, again, for console or art design purposes, so... Mappletail, I like that kind of, like, I don't know how you describe it. It's not cel-shaded, right? But that kind of pastel kind of look to some older games. I think Mega Man Legends probably falls into this as well. These kind of big blocky characters with big flat sets of color. Maybe some, like, lighting kind of changes to their character, the texture on their skin and stuff like that. I really like those things. And just how, like, how colorful that world is as well. It's just a really nice-looking game. I'm going to go through this really quick. Kudodin Squash, there's like these little puppets on sticks in the cutscenes. I really think those are really cute. Nintendogi, I think that does an amazing job just presenting an incredibly tense atmosphere with all the shadows and stuff like that. I think it looks really cool. Hotel Dusk, if you've seen that game, you know what it is. Like a bunch of rotoscoped characters and stuff all drawn in a very cool way. That really, I think, complemented the DS very well in a lot of ways as well. I think it was a good use of the DS hardware and like really kind of covering up, you know, the limitations that system had, and then creating a particular style that really fit that world, right? Industrial Spies Operation Espionage, I love the look of that game. I wish there was so much more art. There is more art of it, but they're only in tiny little boxes on the back of the box art. I would love for there to be an Industrial Spies Operation Espionage art book someday. I don't know. I probably should watch like the eBay listings for Industrial Spies Operation Espionage, see if somebody's trying to sell off their like, you know, work copy of a piece of art or something like that. Okay. Anyways, there's a bunch of games. I just couldn't decide on any one. I didn't even finish going through my whole collection. I just love all these games visually for a lot of different reasons, right? So hopefully that's a acceptable answer, Jillian, that you weren't looking for my number one. Anyways, thank you again, Jillian. Thank you again, Mega Mint. Thank you again, Demodori. Appreciate you guys again for supporting me. And we'll stride into next week in our last Jillian Corner. It's going long, but we're going to talk about Zensis, whether you like it or not. Zensis. This is a 2008 DS game aimed at being the stress relief game for women. If you watch the trailer, it's like, oh, calm your senses, and is specifically built to appeal to the female demographic and stuff like that, right? That is how this game is presented, this very, you know, relaxing game, which makes a lot of sense when you think about when it came out, right? You know, this is pre, you know, iPhone really being big, you know, self-help books and things like that were being ported to the DS, especially in Japan and stuff like that. So there's a lot of these kind of like tools that were trying to, or games that were trying to expand to a larger demographic on the DS and reach that, right? With games like Brain Age and Nintendogs, right? They're trying to capitalize on those expanded audiences that Nintendo is bringing in with the Nintendo DS, right? So, but as a gamer, a hardcore gamer back then on, like, you know, reading Go Nintendo and stuff, the game Zensis was kind of the butt of a joke kind of thing, right? It's this thing that's a casual game, super casual game, so it can't be good, right? But as an adult, you know, I do have more stress in my life, right? And so part of me was like, well, maybe it's time. I'm not a woman. I do appreciate feminine things, so maybe it's time for Zensis. Maybe I can appreciate Zensis today. And the soundtrack is actually really good for it. But unfortunately, the rest of the game, I would say, did not accomplish that goal. Maybe it's due to my inexperience, or maybe it's due to the game. So if you don't know, Zensis launched, there's two versions that came out when it originally launched. There's Zensis Ocean and Zensis Rainforest. I'm playing Zensis Rainforest specifically. And I think there's maybe a sequel called like Zen Garden or something like that as well. But basically there's six games on each of these games, or at least Ocean and Rainforest. And usually these games are some combination or moving objects or trying to get objects to connect to each other from, like, you know, manipulating the board, removing all these pieces from the board as well, or completing a sequence of images or shapes kind of thing, right? So there's a lot of like very kind of, you know, basic, almost like Bejeweled-esque games in a lot of ways. And they have like a nice presentation to them. They have a nice look and feel to them. You know, again, the music in this is really, really good. And I think overall, if you're going to think about like the most de-stressing game thing in this game, it's the music. But, you know, there's some nice title screen with like a waterfall coming in, and each of the games have, you know, this very decorated background kind of thing. So they really dropped a lot of attention of detail into the presentation. All these mini games, I would say, most of the time are not particularly challenging. It depends on what you start your intensity at. You can choose a level of intensity. So if you do start at the highest level, it definitely is hard. So you can make it hard if you want it to be hard. But, you know, in the case of Zensis, I'm thinking, you know, I don't want to be super stressed. So let's just play starting at the baseline kind of thing, right? And so what you do is you're playing these little mini games, and, you know, you're completing, you know, five or so challenges within them. Each mini game has like unique challenges, but they're more or less just like, hey, reach this score. Hey, clear this certain number of boards or something like that, right? So it is a score chasing game at the end of the day. You're still chasing a score. There's a leaderboard, all that stuff. It feels very much like what I remember PC kind of games kind of aimed at the same demographic as a kid looking like, right? You go to a Walmart and you have like this like Pharaoh looking thing, and it's like a Bejeweled clone kind of thing, right? And if you install it on your PC, it just has this mini game in there, but there's a lot of like little presentational touches and things like that, right? That's like what this game feels like to me. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of experience with this type of game. Even games like Bejeweled and stuff like that, you know, these kind of big mainstream games, Peggles, things like that, I just didn't really have a lot of experience with. Even today, I don't have a lot of experience with. But I think individually, a lot of these games are perfectly fine. They're functional. They play well enough. So, you know, I don't really know if I have a lot of strong feelings on them. I think they're okay and they function for what they're trying to do, you know, from a mechanical standpoint. So what I want to talk about more is the overall concept of this game, right? Which is stress relief, right? That is what they're pitching this game as. That's what they want you to get out of this is to be de-stressed, right? And when you are playing at the baseline difficulty, I will say there's a very, I don't know if numbing is the right word feeling, but there's a feeling of just like indifference to what's going on. It's super easy. You know, you're just kind of sitting there flicking through these puzzles, you know, dropping stuff in, and, you know, you're really, really on autopilot, right? You're just kind of sitting there letting your brain just kind of do the stuff without you thinking about it too much, right? It's almost like this weird combination of your brain processing something and then a muscle memory, despite your brain kind of needing to figure it out, right? I don't know if this is a me issue, but I just found this part of the game not particularly de-stressing. I just kind of found it boring. And a lot of times, I would just find myself wishing that the game would end sooner, kind of thing. And which you can, you know, setting your intensity higher, you can do. But the problem is when you go to a higher level, whether it be through playing it or through setting your intensity higher, then the game actually gets kind of tough. And so I don't find that de-stressing either. So it's this weird thing where I'm either intensely bored or I am stressed because there's a timer on screen telling me to solve this puzzle, and I'm just not like putting together the pieces the way that I like. And the more stressed I get, the less likely I am to put the pieces together. That's kind of part of how my brain works. Was like under stress, I have a hard time solving problems a lot of times. So like it feels like that difficulty ramp up was almost undesirable for me at some point, because it's just like I don't really want to be here because I want this game to de-stress me. But now I'm getting stressed out because I'm having to solve this problem and the timer is going beep, 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 stuff like that, right? And so it's just like I never really felt de-stressed playing this game and things like that. So I ended up shifting away from this idea of like I want to be de-stressed from this game. And I said, okay, it didn't do this for me, which is perfectly fine. Maybe it does for someone. If you are de-stressed by Zensis, let me know. I would love to know. I would absolutely love to hear your experience with Zensis if you've played Zensis. But, you know, I was like, let me just try approaching it as a score-based game. And when you do this, there's another problem that happens. This is an incredibly unstable game. It crashes a lot. I feel like it was probably like 25 to 30% of the time I could not reliably expect to finish a game with the score that I got, right? There's times that it would like kick me, it was like hard freeze my Nintendo 3DS. There's times that it would send me to like a level select. And I have a vague recollection of this being an issue at the time and it being kind of a funny thing that, like, oh, you sent this level selective if this game crashes, kind of thing. So it's this really weird, I've never played a game that is just like this inherently broken, because it's like, it's not even like you're doing anything to cause a crash, right? It's like, not like, oh, I got my score so high that, like, you know, the game got over this number that it can't calculate, right? It's not like, oh, I found this weird little thing that can happen in the game. The game just straight up just will crash under normal play. And when you're trying to go for challenges, you're trying to go for score, if you can't guarantee that your score will be properly accounted for, it's really hard to commit to spending a lot of time playing these games that I find a lot of times to just be very boring, and stuff like that, especially if you're just like in it for the long run, trying to clear as many boards as possible to challenge, or trying to get, you know, a highest score. And so you know, it feels like your experience is kind of nullified in that sense once a crash happens and stuff like that. So I just ultimately couldn't really find a way for Zensys to work for me. I think what Zensys works best for is that if you are stressed, go into YouTube and search Zensys Rainforest DS music, OST, whatever, and listen to that. I think that is the best way to de-stress with Zensys, is to not play Zensys and just listen to the soundtrack. Because from a presentation standpoint, it absolutely does try to do something, and I do appreciate that. And I think that is what Zensys has going for it, is its music, and to some extent its visuals, but the visuals aren't dynamic in any way that make it feel like it is a very, like, unique game in terms of how its visuals work. I would say probably better off just closing your eyes and imagining a rainforest, imagining an ocean, and relaxing and meditating and something like that, right? I think that is just a better situation. And I wonder if Zensys would have been better not being a game, right? You know, this is 2008. The definition of what a game was not as broad as it is today, right? At least, you know, when you look at the mainstream audiences and things like that, you know, even something like Brain Age is scoring you, but based off age instead of a score, right? It's just they're modifying how they present that to you. But games like Nintendogs, even Nintendogs has like competitions. Maybe Electroplankton's like a great example. If you don't know Electroplankton on the DS, where you just sit there and play music, there's no goals, there's nothing. Electroplankton is a more de-stressing game where you just sit there, play with the music toy in front of you, and just enjoy it for what it is in that moment. And when it's done, you just close it, and at no point does Electroplankton follow you after that, right? It is just there to be there in that moment, and what you do in that moment doesn't really matter. So I think Zensys may have been better served by an experience like that, but we'll see. I maybe someday I'll check out Zen Garden. I think it came out like a year or two after Zensys, so maybe it's something that I think it's the same series. The box art looks very similar at the very least. It might be Zensys Zen Garden, I don't remember, but anyways, you know, I think it is something that I might look at some point just to see if it's improved. But from what I looked at, the Ocean Edition just didn't seem any better really than Rainforest. And I don't know, like, the crashing again, I'm gonna guess that game crashes a lot as well. They look like very similar games, so I don't know. But anyways, it's just something that I really was disappointed by, because I think I was really coming in hoping it would be this kind of unique, kind of stress-relieving experience. But what I really got were, you know, fairly decent puzzle games, but just in a kind of buggy package. So anyways, that's it for this week. Thank you for coming on my Zen journey with me, Zensys Rainforest Edition. Maybe I will review Zensys Ocean Edition. I marked it as null because I think if I were to, like, quote, finish that game on my backloggery, I would do all the challenges. But with how the game crashes, it's not worth my time and effort to bother with it, I think, anymore. I just kept trying to enjoy it and just couldn't find any joy in it. So, the Ben way. I'm just like, I'm gonna spend 5 hours trying my best to find some way to enjoy your video game, unless it's a good video game that other people enjoy, and then I'm gonna find the other way that I can enjoy it, or figure out why I don't enjoy it and tell you about why I don't enjoy it, rather than trying to find a way to enjoy it. my approach to game criticism is all over the place, but here we are. That is Zensys. Thank you again for coming. OneChore.com is the website. I think by the time you're hearing this, Crazy Climber reviews over on the OCP Plus channel. That is the, it is not from the podcast. It is its own thing that I recorded, but it's a casual review, so don't think, expect anything scripted. So that is over there. Check out Crazy Climber for the Wii there. The PCFX fan club episode should be coming out relatively soonish, definitely probably before this podcast is out, the next podcast is out rather. So this podcast is probably not, but sometime between now and then. I'm also wrapping up an old podcast that I recorded a long time ago, trying to get that out and about. And then I have, I really, really, really need to get the Xenoblade Chronicles panel done for Level Up Expo. I will be at Level Up Expo if you're in town for Level Up Expo, doing a panel. I think it's Friday. I think it's at like 2 p.m. or something like that. But yeah, I just have not done the prep work, and I really need to get that thing sorted out. So, but yeah, I'm trying to wrap up the PCFX fan club podcast, and hopefully once that's done, I can focus on that. So yeah, anyway, that's it. Thanks again. Bye.